Mary Norris joins us by phone tonight. She has spent more than three decades in the copy department of the New Yorker magazine. Out of that experience, she's written a witty and informative book that we're going to talk about tonight. It is titled Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen. Mary Norris, I have so been looking forward to talking with you about your delightful book, Between You and Me, not only because of the inside look you give us at copy editing, but you just have a wonderful sense of humor. So welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you. So nice to talk to you, Barbara.
If I'm correct about this, one of the things I learned in Between You and Me is that there are different kinds of editors or editors who have different tasks at The New Yorker. So if you would tell us what a copy editor does.
Well, a copy editor at The New Yorker does the first reading of a manuscript that has already been accepted and gone over by the editor. And at that level, the copy editor fixes misspellings and puts things in New Yorker style. That is, words that are spelled perfectly well, we change so that they are in New Yorker style with the double L's and the two dots over the second O and cooperate and those kind of things. And then at the next level, when a piece is set up in galleys, another kind of copy editor goes over it and reads it. We call this a Gould reading. It's named for Eleanor Gould, who was a legendary proofreader at The New Yorker. And at that level, you tinker a little with the sentences and try to improve it if it needs improving. And if the author doesn't want it improved, that's okay, too. The author has the last word. And then when a piece is scheduled to go into print, it's read again in the page proof when it is gone to what we call the makeup department, which is the production and layout end of the magazine, the design department. And we all read it again, the fact checker, proofreader, the author, the editor, and we compare our suggestions and choose how to improve the piece more. And then the piece is finally read to make sure no errors have been introduced during the editing process.
Ending up with perfection, or as close as possible.
A lot of sets of eyes are put on every page, maybe as many as, you know, I read everything six times, say, and then there are other proofreaders who are also reading it.
Well, you certainly have edited some very famous writers. I know Philip Roth, George Saunders, Pauline Kael. Do you have more trepidations about editing someone famous? And actually, if you do, there's a wonderful quote from Philip Roth in the book that would be very affirming to your work. So talk about trepidations and affirmations.
Yes, trepidation is definitely part of the job. You don't tread heavily on any writer, but especially somebody who is as revered as Philip Roth and someone whose work is so distinctive as George Saunders, who often writes in a voice that is not educated, and he doesn't want it polished. He wants it kept in the rough. That's, you know, important to the story, that that voice be a little bit rough. So what I do there is I really try to put myself in the place of the writer and figure out whether something is exactly the way that the writer wants it or not, and leave it alone if that's what I think that the writer wants. With Philip Roth, there was a long quotation from a children's history book in his book that was My Married a Communist. The first few chapters of it ran in The New Yorker, and there was this long historical bit, and it was repeated at the end. And I found a very small discrepancy between the two quoted versions and pointed it out on my proof. And that was what I believe led Philip Roth to say to the editor, and then the editor reported it back to me, "Who is this woman, and will she come live with me?" Although I was very afraid to make any stray pencil marks on a proof of something by Philip Roth, I was glad that I was able to be of assistance. And I understand he has a nice swimming pool, and I would gladly go live with him.
So you now have had the experience of being on the other side of the table, so to speak. What was it like having your book edited?
Well, it turned out to be a really good experience. The editor, the one who works large, was wonderful. I had been so used to making little tiny changes in details that that's what I was bent on doing. Whenever I revised, I would just add details and make sure they were spelled right. And he was always telling me, no, you have to broaden it out. You have to make it bigger, not narrower. So I managed with his help to do that. And then when the book was finished and it had to be copy edited, that was another experience. I told them, although I was a copy editor myself, that they should not be intimidated about finding things. Give it a good scouring. I need that as much as anybody. And the copy editor was good. It was somebody who worked freelance for Norton. It was not one of their regular copy editors. They asked me in advance if I wanted it in New Yorker style. I had that option, or if I would use the Norton's own style. And I realized that because I expect writers for the New Yorker to accept our style without complaint, I should accept Norton's style without complaint. So I really made an effort to be amenable to the changes that were required of me. And the copy editor turned out to have a few ticks. My chapter that's called Who Put the Hyphen in Moby Dick? He wanted to change that to Who Put the Hyphen into Moby Dick? And there is some kind of a copy editor's distinction between in and into, which in my own work I've never quite understood or enforced. That was one of the places I had to draw the line. I didn't like the way Who Put the Hyphen into Moby Dick sounded, and I kept it the preposition in. That's actually when you know that a copy editor has gone too far, when the copy editor starts fooling with your preposition.
You've just alluded to the hyphen, and in fact, each punctuation mark is honored in your book. I have a friend who loves semicolons. I, on the other hand, appreciate what they do, but I'm not so fond of how they look visually on the page. They seem a little confused. Am I a comma or a colon? So I wondered if there's a particular punctuation mark that makes you grit your teeth a bit, or of which you're particularly fond.
Well, I would say that the semicolon is not one of my favorites. You know, I grew up not knowing how it was used. Even into my college years, I would sometimes decide, well, I want this to be a sophisticated sentence. I'm going to use a semicolon. And that paper would come back with the semicolon circled in red because I didn't know how to use it. I thought of it as just an industrial strength comma, just an extra large comma. And I didn't realize what it does. When you know how to use a semicolon, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I know writers who use them well. I think the British use the semicolons better than Americans do. Americans have more muscular prose and short sentences, with the exception, of course, of Henry James, who was an internationalist anyway, and I think learned his punctuation skills in England. If you want to learn how to use a semicolon, look at Henry James.
It's delightful talking with you tonight, and I think this is a wonderful book for those of us who love language and, most of all, appreciate your sense of humor. Thanks for visiting with us, Mary.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
I've been talking with Mary Norris about her book, Between You and Me, Confessions of a Comma Queen. You'll find a link to more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray. Thank you.